Hey there, and welcome to the Speechy Side Up podcast. My name is Vanita Litvak, and I am so grateful you're here. I'm an ASHA-certified speech-language pathologist, author, and augmentative and alternative communication consultant who is obsessed with helping SLPs like you stop reinventing the wheel and connect with other SLPs in the trenches. Have you ever wondered how other SLPs seem to be doing it all with ease? Well, around here, you'll get to hear firsthand how SLPs are really getting things done while keeping evidence-based practice and self-care in mind. Think of this as a coffee date with your SLP friends. Get ready to be challenged and encouraged while we learn together. Welcome to the Speechy Side Up podcast. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. This podcast is produced every week for your enjoyment. You can also follow along on Instagram at @speechysideup. This episode is a little different than my other episodes as it's available for ASHA CEUs and part of the 2020 SLP Connect Pod Conference, which is available until October 7th, 2020. If you want to earn ASHA CEUs, then stay on until the very end because that is where I provide information on how to register for ASHA CEUs and other details like how to win awesome giveaway prizes. If you are listening to this episode after SLP Connect, then I hope you will still enjoy this amazing interview that covers how to promote cultural diversity in augmentative and alternative communication, or AAC, assessment and treatment. Before we get started, we have some information to share, like financial disclosures, outcomes, and the agenda for today. So let's start off with our learning outcomes. By the end of this pod course, you will be able to describe at least three factors to consider when conducting augmentative and alternative communication assessments in order to promote cultural diversity. You will be able to identify cultural differences and family considerations while working with children who use AAC. Describe at least three ways to promote anti-racism and diversity in the field of AAC, and describe at least three ways to support diverse literacy instruction with AAC users. Now let's talk about the financial disclosures. I have the following relevant financial and non-financial relationships to disclose. I have ownership interest in Speechy Side Up and Tassel Learning, and I receive royalties from the Lou Knows What to Do book series. I'm also a member of ASHA's Special Interest Group 12. Kara Walton has the following relevant financial and non-financial relationships to disclose. She is a full-time salaried employee of a nonprofit outpatient clinic located in Columbus, Ohio. She is a member of the National Black Association for Speech, Language, and Hearing, and she is assisting Assistiveware, Toby Dynavox, and PRC Saltillo on a project to create Black synthesized voices for AAC systems. And here's the agenda for today. We're going to start by letting Kara give us some background information and introducing herself. Then we will get into how to promote cultural diversity in AAC assessment. Next, we'll talk about the family considerations and how those play a role in the success of AAC use with students. Then we'll talk about ways to promote anti-racism and diversity within the field of AAC. And we'll give a description about the current biases that are being perpetuated in the field of AAC. And finally, we'll wrap up with a description of how to support diverse literacy instruction with AAC users. Today, I'm joined by Kara Walton, a certified speech-language pathologist who specializes in the areas of augmentative and alternative communication, or AAC, and autism. Kara is the author of a recent Change.org petition titled Demands for ASHA to Increase Cultural Sensitivity that received over 15,000 signatures in just 21 days. She has become a pioneer in helping underrepresented SLPs and graduate students in the field feel heard, experience change, and receive cultural education starting at the graduate level. Now that we've got that all covered, let's get started. Hi, Kara. Thank you so much for coming.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
This is going to be such an epic episode, and I can't wait for people to learn more about you. So why don't we start by giving them some more background information, anything I didn't cover in the bio that you'd like people to know?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have been an SLP for 2 years. I got my master's degree from The Ohio State University. Go Bucks. And I currently work at a mental health organization facility where we serve individuals from the age of 2 to 22 who have autism and other behavioral health diagnoses like ODD. We do have some Down syndrome and things like that. So I basically serve those high behavior, high problem behavior kiddos. Hitting, biting, pinching, screaming, anything that will keep them out of a typical public school district, that's the kids that I serve. And I love it. About 30% of my caseload is AAC.
Wow. That's amazing. So I can't wait to hear like your perspective on AAC with this population, and especially in regards to like inclusion and making it more culturally diverse. So we're definitely going to dive into that this episode.
Yes.
Can't wait. So let's start with talking about some considerations that speech language pathologists need to keep in mind when conducting AAC assessments, specifically in regards to cultural diversity.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have to think when we're doing an assessment of any kind, whether this is a language assessment, an AAC assessment, ARTIC, whatever it may be, we have to make sure we have a thorough case history. So many times I'll get a case history back and great, important information is missing. And I think sometimes we just write information was missing from case history and we just move on because, hey, I'm just doing ARTIC, right? But even with just doing our take, we need a thorough case history regardless of the cultural background. So I think that is the first place we need to start. We need to be more diligent as SLPs in getting thorough case histories. And when we don't get them, we need to go back to the families and maybe talk them through the questions. Maybe they just didn't understand what this was asking of them. And try to get that information because it does make a difference in the assessment that we give as well as our plan for therapy moving forward. So when I think about cultural diversity and AAC assessment, I thought of like some do's and don'ts, right? Because I think it's just so much easier if we have an actual plan and ways to move by. So when I first think, I'm thinking, let's always start with the kind of negative side, right? The don'ts, and then we'll move on to the do's. So first I wrote, don't expect for families to tell you everything about their culture, no matter what their culture is, Black, white, Asian. I mean, just don't expect someone to walk in and you be like, hey, tell me about being Black. Like, that's the crazy statement, right? And although you may be really trying to get at some important information, that's just not gonna work, right? Do be willing to do the work and to learn and to do your own research. So if you know you got this case history back, and I'm going to just do a disclaimer right here. Most of what I'm going to say is from the Black perspective because that's the only perspective I can talk about. And I'm also only talking about my own experiences. So when I say Black or cultural diversity, I'm kind of mostly talking about the Black, but this applies to all backgrounds. But like I said, do be willing to do the work and to learn and to research. You need to know how other cultures look at play, how they look at social interactions. All of these things are very necessary, especially for an AAC assessment. And don't expect, like I said, the parent to tell you all of these things. My second one is don't go in assuming, right? Like you've met one Black child who uses AAC, looks nothing different from maybe the next Black child that uses AAC. We say the same thing in the autism community, right? You meet one more person with autism, may look totally different from the next person you meet with autism. So keep that in mind. Don't go in assuming that this kid or this adult is going to look like the person you had before. Do be willing to ask the family or the client their preferences. I think it's especially important with even how we label ourselves. Some people label themselves people of color, some label themselves African-American, some just label themselves Black. Me personally, I go by the label Black. So I think I think this is going to be awkwardness out all the way in the beginning. So I think that's very important. Know what your families want to be called. Know what your clients want to be called. And the last do is to be willing to be open and make mistakes. Say I'm sorry. People are more willing and receptive to educate you and forgive you than you think. I would much rather somebody ask me a question instead of assuming and offending me and then not say anything about it. I would rather you ask so that I can then educate you or send you somewhere to be educated. So I think those are very important do's and don'ts to remember when you're doing AAC assessments.
Oh, I love that. Such good points. And I love like how positive you are because you had more do's than don'ts.
Yes, always got to.
That's great. So I'll recap those really quick. Don't expect the family to tell you everything about their culture. Do your own research. Don't go in assuming. Be willing to ask about their preferences and be open to making mistakes. I think those are awesome suggestions.
Yes.
Do you use a particular like protocol for your family case histories?
So I do not. I have to use what my facility uses, and we just have one kind of general protocol. However, when I am getting a client that I know is going to need AAC, I usually like to call the parent and have a more in-depth talk with them about, you know, these kind of things that I've talked about. Unfortunately, it's not on our case history. I think those would be great things to add, but currently they are not.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, as we're like evolving as a field, that's definitely something that people can keep into consideration. But I imagine it would be things that apply, like if we're talking specifically about AAC, it'd probably be like things that are really important to know in terms of like symbol selection, mm-hmm. voice selection, right?
Absolutely.
And maybe who those key players are going to be, like who is really involved with the child. Maybe it's the parents, maybe it's the siblings, maybe it's the grandparents. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And I think that that's so important going back to, you know, not assuming. Make sure you ask this information because these are critical things that you need to know for not only assessment, but going forward, once the child has AAC, who's going to be that person that you need to be in contact with that is going to help get this child rolling and using more functional communication? So these are all, you know, vital questions that you just have to ask. And it may be awkward, and someone may give you a funny look, but I'm telling you, 9 times out of 10, they are probably more happy that you asked instead of you assuming.
For sure. Yes, that's so good. So what cultural differences do SLPs need to keep in mind when they're working with children who use AAC, like in regards to familial considerations or other ones?
Yes, I think you brought up a great point about who may be the main caregiver. So like, for example, in some cultures, it's not appropriate for kids under the age of 12 to really talk to adults. So you're asking the mom, how does this kid communicate, so forth and so on. And they may give you something totally different than what older sister may give you that actually has that daily communication with the child. So I think if you're going to get a thorough assessment of that child, it's important to ask that, hey, who is the main caregiver of this child? Or who does this child hang out with at home? That's an easy way to ask and get more information on who the child is around the most. I always think it's really cool for you to maybe ask that sibling to come in and play with the child or do a typical interaction. So you can already see what levels of language they already have, whether that's gestures or head nod, body language. Because sometimes if you're just expecting the parent to give you that information, you may be missing out on so much knowledge that the child already has. And with that, be mindful of what you're asking parents and families to do when they go home. I think often as SLPs, we become frustrated when we see kids doing certain things at our centers and are amazing at it. And then we look back and they're not using their devices at home. Think about why that may be. especially if they're English as second language learners. Maybe they don't understand the device, or maybe they're not able to help model well on a device for the child. So just be mindful of your expectations of families. I think another big one to be mindful of, especially considering English as second language learners, is avoid a lot of speech jargon. AAC, what does that mean? Augmentative Alternative Communication. What does that mean?
What does that mean?
My mom asks me all the time, what do you do again? I do AAC. What is that? And then I tell her, she's like, huh? So what I mean? Like, think about the words that we use in our speech jargon. I mean, that goes for any culture, right? Like, they do not understand the words and the terminology we are using. So avoid the speech jargon as much as you possibly can. And then my last point would definitely be is make sure you're considering the client and the family when you are selecting icons, the voice, specific words. With my kids as young as 4 years old, as soon as they get a device, I let them pick their voice. I turn it on, we go through Sally, whatever the names are. And when their face lights up, I know that's the one they want. And I think that's so critical that we allow them to pick their boys.
Those are all such great suggestions. And the whole jargon piece, you're absolutely right. Like, we spell out AAC, but then what does that even mean? You're right. Mm-hmm. And as, professionals who maybe not specialize in AAC, we do, but other people may not. Descriptive teaching is a big part of like AAC teaching, right? So we should know better than to use a French mm-hmm. term like augmentative and alternative communication. You really got me thinking about that. So I'll have to use more core vocabulary next time I describe it in the future.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, I'm so guilty of it too. And then I'm wondering why this parent is not responding back on the phone after I just said, hey, I'm going to do an AAC assessment on your kid. And they're like, I don't know what you're asking of me.
Yeah.
So think about it, of how what you knew of AAC before you went to grad school, before you went to undergrad, and how somebody may have explained it to you. I think what I'm going to start doing is start explaining it to my mom. And if she shakes her head like she gets what I'm saying, then that's going to become my new script. Because if she doesn't get it, then I'm pretty much missing the mark.
That's such a good way to practice it. And I bet I don't think there's anything out there, but like a handout that, especially for AAC specifically, that kind of highlights any of that jargon that could be provided maybe in a private practice setting or even a school-based setting. That would be a great resource.
Yes. That sounds amazing. Maybe I should make that.
You should. I'm like, maybe you should make it, but I know you've got a lot going on. We'll just put that out there. If it's okay, I want to share a story about a time that I made a mistake, and yeah. I just thought about it now. I've never really talked about it before, but I assumed when I was doing an AAC assessment. So if it's okay, can I share that?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So, as an AAC specialist working in the school setting, I had a student and we looked at eye gaze and we looked at head pointing, and this student did so much better with head pointing. And we initiated the trial, the teacher took data, and it went on for months. Well, towards the end of the trial, right before we were going to order the device went home so that the child could like try it at home as well. And actually, I'm sorry, it did not go home, but the staff had forgotten to take off the head pointing sticker that day off the child. And so the child went home and the parents saw the sticker, and this was a male student, and they said that in their culture that the dots should be used only for females. And I never even thought to consult with the family. And I just was totally naive to that, the fact that that could be a cultural consideration that would impact this trial. If I had done what you suggested, which is to do, a thorough case history, which in a school setting, it's not common, but it should be more common. And I think the fact that you brought that up and the points that you made,
should really get school-based SLPs thinking about this more when doing assessment, whether it's speech and language or AAC, getting a more of a case history from the family.
Mm-hmm. I definitely agree. I think, you know, even if you don't have time to get a thorough case history, make a phone call, especially with a huge change as AAC, right? Like, these devices cost thousands and thousands of dollars. And usually this kid has to have it for about 5 years, right, before they can get a new one. What if the parent is like, I don't want that thing, or I want something else, or show me what all the options is. I think we need to make sure that we are including our families in all of the decisions that we make, because at the end of the day, they know their child way more than we could ever know their child. And they will be communicating with their child way more than the child will ever communicate in my speech room. So we have to make sure that we have parent buy-in, and also this is the route that they want to take.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we definitely didn't like do a thorough case history. We had a part on our assessment that said, like, was the family consulted, but that can mean so many different things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just the facts that you brought up with the do's and don'ts, I think we needed to take it a step further. I'll just kind of wrap that story up. So I had a conversation with the parents, and ultimately, we decided to just place the head pointing sticker on another part of the body and the cheek because it worked best. And then they also were open to using eyeglasses with like the glass kind of poked out and putting the sticker on the glass rather than like on the student's head. So we were able to find solutions that worked for everybody after like a long consultation with the family. And if maybe I had done that prior, like in the very beginning, it would have gone more smoothly from the get-go.
Yeah. But I think your story brings up, you know, such a great point that you didn't stop there and became discouraged, like, oh man, but he's really good. I gave with this head pointer. Now what? Like, now the kid can't communicate, because that's sometimes we become defensive. Uh-huh. So I think that's amazing that you were like, no, let's figure it out. You know, parents don't want it on their forehead. It's offensive in their culture. What can we do next? And I think that brings up a great point as SLPs or other professionals. You know, when we offend others or we do something that maybe not all the way that appropriate, to just say, I'm sorry, and let's figure out what we should be doing.
Yeah, thank you for that. You're right. I mean, as professionals, sometimes we can be like, well, we know best, but really the family mm-hmm. knows best. They know what's going to, like, you said a really good point. Like, if it's not being used in the home after it's recommended, then why is that? And it probably has a lot to do with the family involvement from the beginning.
Absolutely.
Awesome. All right. So let's talk about how SLPs can better promote anti-racism and diversity in the field of AAC.
Yes, absolutely. So first I want to say diversity is important. We all know that. But I think we have to start looking and going past diversity. So let's think about what diversity means. That just means we have a mix of all cultures or a mix of different beliefs, right? But we need more than that. We need to get to cultural sensitivity and inclusion and acceptedness. That's where we need to be now in our field. We can't just be diverse, but we have to make sure that we are accepting of all of these different cultures and these different backgrounds. So the first way that SLPs can support this is be an advocate for your kids, be an advocate for your families, be an advocate for your clients. If you see something that's not going right, maybe a rep from a company comes in and says something that's inappropriate about your kid. I don't know what it could be. Not going against my AC reps. I love them all. But be an advocate. Step up and say, hey, I don't know if that was right. Hey, we should accept our kids no matter what they're doing. Hey, like, don't say that about my kid. Like, it can be something very simple, but I think knowing that you are accepting of that person the way they are from their cultural background is the first step that we need to make. We have to go past diversity. We have to become accepting of everyone. And I will say, you know, the current climate that is going on right now is everyone has become used to going to social media to figure out, you know, what's going on, what could I be doing to do better. And that is all great. There's great information on social media. There's great people putting out information. But be mindful what you're learning on social media and be willing to research what someone just told you, right? Like if I post on my Instagram that the sky is orange, are you just going to go with my word because I make nice pictures and I'm on Instagram, like, and 10 people liked it? Like, no, you're probably gonna be like, I'm looking at the sky right now and it's not orange. So be mindful of that. When you're promoting anti-racism or you're growing in your in anti-racism, make sure that you are doing your research. Even things that I say, don't take my word for it. I give you a definition of something and you just say, hey, it must mean that because Kara said it. No, go do your research and make sure that the information that you are taking in and that you are getting ready to live by is accurate. Google is an amazing thing. You can type in anything on Google and it will give you the answer. And then one more thing I think that is important when we are promoting diversity, especially in the field of AAC, is be mindful that, like my point that I made earlier, I'm not assuming, this kind of ties in that people of the same culture can still have differences. So I am from the Midwest. I'm a Black Midwestern cis woman, but I am totally different than a Southern Black woman. So be mindful of that. Like our words are different, how we act are different. So make sure you're, like I said, you're mindful of that. For example, the term of pop and soda. In AAC, we sometimes say, oh, it doesn't matter. It's a French word. It means the same thing, right? But like, we get in debates on Facebook all the time if the word is pop or soda. And maybe your kid feels the same way. So be mindful of, you know, the particular French words we're using or programming in our kids' devices.
That's such a good point. You're right. Like we do kind of go with what the device manufacturer has put on there, you know, unless someone's really fighting against it. But if we're like talking about cultural sensitivity, maybe we should be taking it a step further and looking at those words and asking them which one they prefer.
Yes, absolutely. And I think it's also important, you know, we don't get offended by it or like, oh, I got too much to do, I don't have time to change this. Like, just do it. It's this kid's voice, you know. Be mindful of that. Like, we are programming and we are giving someone a voice, and we should allow their voice to be whatever they want it to be, and it can't be an inconvenience to us. For example, I had a family who was adamant on, this was actually in grad school, but the family was adamant that the kid's device said jammies instead of pajamas. And how simple is it for me to go in and change this word from pajamas to jammies? I mean, it would take me literally 30 seconds. And I remember the teachers being like up in an uproar about it. Like, we're saying pajamas and the book is called Bananas in Pajamas or whatever the lesson was. I don't remember. But I'm just like, what difference does it make? If the family wants it to be jammies, let's be sensitive to their culture and just change it to jammies. Those things will get buy-in from parents way faster than anything we can talk and say to them. Our actions are what matter.
Yes, that's such a good point. Actions definitely matter more than the things that we say or, you know, talk about. Talking about doing your own research, do you have any resources that you like to point other SLPs to, point parents to, that people who are listening can start taking a look at?
Yeah, so the National Black American Speech Language Hearing Association has ample amount of resources on their website. And they also list people who are high up in the organization, like the president, those kind of people. And they are so receptive to your emails and your questions. So I would say that's a great place to start. Yeah, I think that would be a great place to start.
Okay. Yeah, that's a great suggestion. I'm pretty sure I follow them on social media, but you're right. This whole social media thing, just to give an example, like there's this thing going on right now with posting like a black and white photo, and it's really nice. It's all about women empowerment, but lo and behold, there's a deeper meaning behind it. And, you know, with people posting and not doing the research behind it, we're finding out that we're missing a major message, which has to do with Turkish women genocide, basically, right?
Yes, yes.
So yes, I love that suggestion to do your own research and being an advocate for your student as well. It's so important.
Yeah, and not to take away from the Turkish genocide that is going on, but you know, that also reminds me of the Blackout Tuesday, where everyone was posting black squares on social media. And it was great, the solidarity that everyone came with. I mean, it made me emotional. I had to stop. I mean, even though there were all black squares, I just had to stop looking at it because it did make me very emotional. But I will say, to then see people not say anything after that, as if I posted this black square, which means I'm anti-racist and I believe in the same things you believe in. And so now I'm hands off and I don't have to say anything or do anything. Be mindful of that. That can look to be performative, that you're doing it for a like or a view or a follow. Make sure your heart is really in something. And if it's not, re-examine yourself and, you know, be okay with that if it's not in this moment. But I would much rather you not do the performative and be sincere.
Absolutely. Thank you for bringing up that example, because that's another really relevant one as well. In terms of like AAC companies and being better advocates, I think we could definitely, as SLPs in the field, better advocate for these device manufacturers to step it up, right?
Absolutely.
You have something exciting. I don't know if you're allowed to share it or not. If not, that's okay. We can talk about something separately. But what are some ways we could probably like do better with that as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm free to share it. It's not a, I don't think it's a huge secret. At least they didn't tell me I couldn't share it. So
we'll always take, we can take this out before he answers
anything. Right. They didn't tell me I couldn't share it, so I'll let you know. Okay. But I got asked by AssistiveWare to join they're calling it an African-American voice chat. And basically they are gathering Black SLPs, specifically those that specialize in AAC, Black parents who have children with AAC, and also Black users of AAC, to come together to help develop the Black synthesized voice. So their plan is, currently they are joining forces, AssistiveWare, Toby Dynavox, PRC and Satillo are joining forces to come up with four different voices that will be used for text to talk synthesized voice option, which I mean is amazing. It's just so cool to see this process unfold.
Yeah, and you're going to be part of it. That's so amazing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's just the start of it. Let's make sure that, you know, they say the voice will be out. They're hoping for a year. It may take a little longer, but let's make sure that we don't become complacent, or we don't just settle for this. This is a great start. Don't get me wrong. I am totally excited. When I saw it, I was like, that's so cool. Like, long time coming. Yes. But then let's also fight for icon sets that are already programmed, or let's take it to the next level and see what else we could be advocating for our clients. So I think that that's always important, especially in today's climate, is that we just don't settle for the next best thing, that we keep striving to get better.
Absolutely. Yes. And I love how you brought up the symbol sets. That's another way that SLPs can probably better advocate. And then the marketing materials that these companies use as well. Like, they're serving a wide range of clientele You know, we shouldn't see like a homogenous population in the marketing materials either, or training
absolutely materials. Yes, or like I'll get like token boards in from these companies, or they send me already made schedules, and all of the images of the people are white, and it's like, am I saying make all the images black? No, but also like, where's the variety here? You know, certain symbol sets, there just aren't any, and I think we should be mindful of that, and think about how our kids may feel if I'm saying, hey, this is you on this schedule, and it's like, that's not me at all.
Yeah.
So also be advocating for those things with these device companies. And I mean, it takes a simple email. I email one of my reps all the time, things that I have suggestions for, questions about. And she's like, hey, I'm going to get that to somebody that actually can do something. And I'm like, great, you're amazing. And even if they don't say anything back, at least you tried and at least you advocated for what was right.
Yeah, that's so true. I love those suggestions. Well, let's talk about current biases that are being perpetuated in the field of AAC. I'm really curious to hear your perspective on this.
Yeah, so I've been actually asked this question a lot lately, and I'm like, OMG, this is a hot topic. So I try to think, hey, what is really, you know, being talked about right now? And I think one of the huge misconceptions is that only bilingual individuals need cultural customization on their language system.
Mm.
And I'm like, wait, people really think that? Do they really think that only if I speak French and English that I need special customizations? Well, if I was an AAC user, if I had a child that used AAC, we speak only English and I'm Black and I would want special customization. So I think keep that in mind. And the way you would figure this out is with your case history, is with that talk that you have with the parent, is how you see that parent interact with your child, and then you go do your research and see what that may mean. So I think that is something that we need to be mindful of, is that cultural differences are not just for our English as second language learners, are not just for our bilingual individuals. It's for everyone. So keep that in mind. And I think the other huge one, which, I mean, I guess maybe is not a huge bias anymore, that now assistive wearing, Toby and Pretty or Fierce and Tiller are getting together, but the fact that we don't need dialectical differences on devices, we definitely do. They can't be all program words, simple phrases that you think may need to be added. It needs to be variety, and it needs to be easy programmed already there. I shouldn't have to add in every, for lack of a better word, slang term into this child's device. The technology is there. Just imagine you can program your Siri, like if you're really tech savvy, you can program your Siri to say and talk and use certain vocabulary words that you want it to use. The technology is already there. Like, let's expand it and expect it in AAC.
I love that. Yes, expand and expect it. That's so good. Mm-hmm. Such good points. So I guess also, where does like cultural appropriation come into this? I love the fact that they are, you know, inviting people of color to help out with these projects. But do you feel like there can be, you know, some cultural appropriation that could be happening as well, or maybe happen like prior, which remains like a current issue with AAC?
Mm-hmm. So I think where that starts is we don't have enough diversity and inclusion at the higher up levels, right? I mean, we barely have it at this teach level. Only 3% are Black. Only 8% are people of color. So that's the first issue, is we need to advocate and also be open to having board members in people that look like everyone else. I shouldn't go online and look up the board members of this particular assistive technology company, and they're all white males. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, where, how could they speak for a white woman? How could they speak for an Asian child, right? We need more diversity up in those higher ups than the people who have the control to change these things. I will say, I think that I am enjoying the fact that at least they are asking for our opinion and for making sure they're considering how we feel about these certain things. But the caveat to that is, at what point do you pay me for my opinion?
Yes, I was literally just thinking about that while you were
talking. You know, like, I'm trying to figure out, well, is that the nice way to say it? That's the nicest way to say it. Like, I am all for helping, and, you know, because at the end of the day, this is going to help my clients and the people I serve, and that's my first priority, right? But if you're making me join a group chat and you are the facilitator and you're getting paid to facilitate this group chat, at what point do you, does this company think that my opinion becomes valuable? At what point am I now worth the information I have given you? So I think that companies, and I hope, you know, they listen and hear this, that that is huge and that is important. Because at what point then do you then just say, hey, we came out with this and this is great, and now everybody's going to use this, and forget all the people who actually helped you got there.
Yes. Oh my goodness, Kara. When you like shared that with me before we started, I didn't really understand like where you, like you were coming from when you said you felt like a certain way about it. I thought I understood. I assumed, which I shouldn't. But now it's like, that's what you meant. And I totally get it. And you're absolutely right. Absolutely right. Yeah, that's a whole other like topic in and of itself, isn't it?
Yeah, we can talk for hours about that one.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, they definitely need to like work with you on that, but also credit too. Like, you better be credited in that case, because yeah, they can't just take your time. Your time is valuable.
Right. And all the people who are also giving this information, you know, like, we are all so valuable. And if you didn't think we were valuable, you wouldn't be asking us. So you know the value that we bring. So just make sure we're honoring people's value and their time. And in a small caveat to that, also be mindful of what you may be asking people to do in the era of social media. I often have people, and I love your questions, please do not get me wrong, but sometimes people come to me and they want me to explain, like, I can't even give a good example, but they just want me to explain, like, tell me what it's like to be Black. And I'm just like, I don't really know what you're asking me. And also, like, I don't really know how to explain that to you. Maybe, like, do your own research. Maybe watch some Netflix, has some great documentaries or things of that nature. But just be mindful of what you're asking people that you don't really know that well on social media to do or give you advice about, because those things are draining and they're also very time consuming. But more or less, they're very draining, especially with what's going on in America right now. Like, I don't want to always look at my DMs and someone, you know, posts a news article and asks me, what's your opinion? Ooh, I don't know if I want to share my opinion, right? That's not to say never ask me a question. I'm not saying that at all. Like, if I bring up a topic, sure, go ahead, have at it, ask me a question. But don't just like send people articles or, hey, this person said this, what do you think? Just be mindful of those things and what you're asking other people to do.
Yeah, love those suggestions. This is very eye-opening, I think, for some people, but I'm glad like it's being shared on here, and just the broader message is being like put out there. I appreciate it. I am really excited about this next topic. It's all about AAC and literacy, which is like both of our passions. I'm like thrilled to hear your thoughts. So how can SLPs better support diverse literacy instruction with AAC users?
Yes, absolutely. Well, I think, you know, like I said, the way that the current climate is going, I think SLPs as a whole are doing so much better and want to be better and see this change. You know, I see people posting diverse resources, or I see people going out and buying these diverse books. Those are all great steps and great ideas. And please do not let anyone tell you otherwise. I love that you are expanding your book selection, and keep it up. You know, that is great. So what I do want to say is, make sure your books become more diverse. That's first. But also be mindful of the storylines of the books you are picking. And here's what I mean by that. So sometimes I see, you know, during Black History Month is usually when a lot of Black books are now brought up to children. You know, they read about Martin Luther King Jr., or they read about Rosa Parks, so forth and so on. That is all great and amazing, but the Black experience should be taught to our children more than just from the historical perspective. Black kids want to see books about kids riding bikes and winning awards, just like white kids want to. Black kids want to see books about getting your first puppy, just like, you know, other kids want to. So just be mindful that you don't go out and you buy all these books about slavery, or I don't know, but, you know, I've seen a lot of Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks books out lately, so maybe that's just like what's in my head. And like I said, those are not bad books, right? But there is more to the Black story and more to the Black experience than just what we have come from. Let's look into where we're going. They don't want to always read about Martin Luther King Jr. Our kids are smart. They catch on. They want the same experiences as everyone else. And also with that being said, be mindful of what other topics you are bringing up with your kids. For example, I posted on my social media a book about Don't Touch My Hair, which is about a book of a little Black girl who has curly hair and everyone just walking around freely without asking for her consent, touching her hair. And I can experience that. I've been through that my entire life, and how uncomfortable I felt and how dirty that feels if someone just walks up and runs their fingers through your hair. And so I shared that book on my social media, and I saw a lot of other white SLPs then go order the book. Not necessarily a bad thing, right? If you are sharing this story with everyone, we shouldn't walk up and go touch anybody's hair without their permission.
Right.
You are only now going to show this book to the Black girls that you serve. That's where the issue lies. So just be mindful that don't just go out and buy all this diverse material and these diverse books to show to your diverse side of your caseload. We all need to learn about everybody. And so just make sure that you're sharing this stuff with everyone. And not just, I'm going to share this with my Black students, or I'm going to share this with my Asian students. No, share with everyone. We all can learn from each other. So I would just say, be mindful in that, in the books that you choose.
That is so good. I love that suggestion. And I'm also like kind of mortified that someone would actually like come up and touch somebody else's hair. And you're right. Like, it shouldn't just be like, I mean, people are doing that. I'm pregnant right now and people are doing that with my stomach and I hate it. So I can't even imagine. It's such a violation of, you know, your body. But I do think that's such an important point to keep in mind that, you know, yes, we want our clients from diverse backgrounds to feel represented in the information that we're teaching to them, but we shouldn't just pull out those books when we're working with those clients. We should be pulling it about for everybody. And then Don't Touch My Hair, like, we have a great core word right there that could be used as a right?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that that's just, you know, so important that, and again, and just a caveat to that, make sure that these books you go out and buy, that they're not all about, I guess, a stereotype of a Black person, right? So, like, not all Black girls have gone through where people touch their hair. You know, that's just my story. The girl next to me may have never had anybody touch their hair, right? So, yes, it's still a good book, but not everyone has the same experiences. So not all Black kids are going to want to read a book about someone not touching their hair. Mm-hmm. So that goes back to my first point, you know, like, Black kids and Asian kids, I'm sure, and all other different cultures want to see everyday life, right? Because that's how they imagine themselves, and that's how they put themselves in the story, which makes them want to read and want to learn how to read. So just be mindful of that. Like, make sure you're buying everyday life books. Yes, you can have those books that are those teaching moments. Absolutely. Yes, you can have those books from historical perspectives. Absolutely. Am I saying don't buy a Rosa Parks book? No. But just make sure you're keeping a good variety.
Yeah, you're keeping us in check. I appreciate it. Everybody in check. Do you have, like, some books that you really like that represent, like, a diverse population, but not in terms of stereotypes or, like, historical nonfiction?
Ooh. I have so many, but of course I am not, like, they're not coming to my head right now.
That's okay. I used to, like, do book reviews when I was more into, like, doing that. And one publisher, the National Center for Youth Issues, I found that they always did a pretty, and, you know, this is coming from my perspective, so I could be totally wrong, but I felt like they did a good job of representing diverse cultures, but not those not being the main story. Like, it would be about a kid who has a dream and they want to go after it, or maybe they don't have, they're like are doing too many activities in a day and they're getting really overwhelmed, but the main character would be like a person of color, but it's not like that's not their story. It's more about, like, maybe social emotional issues. I like their books for that reason.
Yes, absolutely. And a great resource for diverse books is at Having Our Say on Instagram. And that's HABINGOURSAY, Having Our Say on Instagram. She does book reviews and also does a lot of talks about the diverse picture books that she finds. And they are great. Half of them are in my Amazon cart to be purchased.
That's awesome. I love that. What about The Conscious Kid? Do you feel like that's a good resource as well?
Yes. That's a great one.
Okay. All right, cool. I'm just writing that down so we can make sure to include that in the show notes. In terms of, like, reading and writing strategy with AAC, let's just talk about writing. We can start there. We know that, like, shared writing, predictable chart writing has been found to be really effective. I think the books that you talked about, like, when you're doing those shared writing activities, making sure that those books are diverse and are not just, like, historical nonfiction or addressing a stereotype, that's probably a great place to start. Is there anything you want to add to that in terms of, like, writing or, like, evidence-based writing or reading strategies for AAC and literacy?
Yeah, so the first thing that I can think of, and it's just been on my mind so heavy lately, is that this is not necessarily geared at diversity, but with AAC and literacy, we have to teach our kids the alphabet and how to write and read. It's so important. I think a lot of times we sometimes overlook the literacy part of AAC because we're focusing on a motor plan and these core words and these fringe words. And I love apps in language systems with motor plans. I'm a huge motor plan advocate, right? But my student will have so much more of the world open up to them once they learn the alphabet and how to read and write. I'm sorry, this is going off your topic of shared reading and shared writing, but I see so many SLPs focusing on the core words and the fringe words and how to navigate them on devices, which is great. And that is, of course, the first step. But let's make sure we don't stay there. We have to teach our kids how to read and write. No matter what their level is, at some point, somehow, they have to learn how to read and write. That is the only way that the world of language is truly going to open up for them.
No, I think that's a perfect point to bring up. You're right. It's so important. I think that sometimes like there's this like hierarchical training implementation that goes on with AAC. Like, let's get staff on board, or let's introduce the device. Now let's get staff on board. Now let's get modeling. Let's introduce core vocabulary. Whereas like literacy could have been there from the beginning as well, and just kind of been alongside all of those.
Yes, absolutely.
Go ahead.
Oh, that was it.
Okay. I was going to say, for anybody who wants to learn more about AAC and literacy implementation, Karen Erickson out of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, has some really incredible resources. So definitely check those out, while keeping in mind to use a diverse selection of literacy materials.
Yes.
Well, before we wrap up today, I can't believe like this is already almost over, first of all, because this has been incredible.
I know. Great.
Is there anything that like we didn't touch on that you want the listeners to be aware of?
I just want everyone to know that I am so thankful for the work that people are doing now, and wanting to learn more about diversity, or wanting to support Black SLPs or people of color SLPs. Please do not take your work or your actions as allies as we think they are in vain. Sometimes, you know, I may, like here, I said a lot of don't do and do this and blah, blah, blah. And you're probably like, oh my gosh, I just, like, I'm trying and now I feel like nothing I can do is right. And please do not feel that way. I am so appreciative of the steps that people are moving in for more inclusion, for more cultural sensitivity, for having these talks, for having these conversations. So don't think that you're just getting started and you haven't done enough, or you got started and you messed up and you're not going the right way and no one's appreciative of it. And don't feel that way. Not that you should be doing it to be appreciated, right? But just know that any step in the right direction and any voice that you give to the causes of my community is appreciated. Just make sure, like I said, it's not performative and you're doing it for a certain reason, but because your heart is truly in it, know that I appreciate your allyship.
I love that. I think that's the perfect note to end on. I was going to add something to that, but I think that this is your podcast, and I'm just so grateful that you came on and shared all of your wealth and knowledge. And people are probably going to just be so excited to connect with you more. So where can they find you after this episode?
Yes. So currently I'm only on Instagram, at the Buckeye SLP.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Kara. This has been such a pleasure. I've learned so much. I've been truly humbled by this episode, and there's still a lot of work to do. So I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. It was so fun.
Thank you for participating in SLP Connect. Remember that listening to this pod course does not automatically guarantee ASHA CEUs. If you want to earn ASHA CEUs for this conference, there is a small $25 administration fee to process and submit your paperwork. You can pay this administration fee and find more details at tasseltogether.com/SLPconnect. Once your purchase is made, you will be able to access the course evaluation, quiz, and earn your certificate. Please submit these materials by October 7th, 2020 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. SLP Connect would like to thank its sponsors for offering products, services, and discounts as giveaways to attendees at no charge. You can see a list of these sponsors and enter to win on the SLP Connect webpage. SLP Connect would also like to thank the presenter of this course who has provided her speaking services at no charge. Ready to fill your digital swag bag? You can enter to win a giveaway of your choice by taking a screenshot of this course and sharing it on social media. Use the hashtag SLPConnect2020 so we can find you. The winner will be announced by midnight, October 10th, 2020. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoyed this second annual PodCon.